This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about functional neurology. That means neurology taking in all aspects of a person's diet, their sleep habits, the environmental pollutants they're exposed to, the infections they may be exposed to, their gut microbiome, and on it goes. There are many, many factors that may be root causes of neurologic diseases, diseases like Alzheimer's, MS, Parkinson's disease, seizure disorders. All these things can be influenced by not just targeted medications, but also a more of an integrative approach. And a proponent of that is today's guest. He's Ken Sharlin. And Ken, so in your book, you say, by way of introduction, and I'm quoting, "I am a product of my generation." And I was intrigued by that statement. You are, I think, slightly younger than I am. Maybe you're on the cusp of being a baby boomer. Probably you're more likely to be a Gen X guy. So what did you mean by that?
Well, I'm 54, so I don't know where that puts me. I'm not sure if I'm Gen X or baby boomer. 1964.
So you're about the youngest baby boomer around, because I think the cutoff is about, you know, the Kennedy assassination.
Yes. Wow. So, right on the edge.
Yeah, right.
One foot in.
Yeah,
you know, I think that most of us, myself at least included, have gone through life sort of on autopilot. If you're going to the store to pick up groceries, you know, what do you kind of automatically buy when you're there? And, you know, and of course, I know this is probably not your listeners, but I'm kind of a snooper when it comes to being in the grocery store, and I look at what's on the conveyor belt of the cash register or in somebody's cart. Oh, yeah. And
amusement looking in the shopping carts and, you know, what's being rung up at the cashier.
But we all live in our own reality in a sense. And, you know, I say this with a tremendous amount of respect to folks that, you know, many don't really know any better. They feel that this is normal. You got to get your boxes of cereal. You got to get your six pack of Coca-Cola. You get your processed fake cheese, you know, to sprinkle on whatever. I mean, this is just normal stuff. We're not taught otherwise, right? I grew up watching lots of television. You know, so those are products of my generation, I suppose. But I also, and I think this is the context of my book, I also grew up at a time where I rode my bike everywhere. Right? Yep. That was my main mode of transportation, riding my bike.
Free range kids, yep.
Yeah, you know, we had the parents that said, "Go outside. I don't want to see it till
just
I call you."
Just be back before dark. Yeah,
right. Thing. What has changed now in 2019? So, you know, we are now afraid to send our kids even just down the road by themselves, much less across town on their bike. And you know,
they have more exciting realities at their disposal at their fingertips with screens. Perpetual screens and social media and all that.
If you give them a baseball, would they know what to do with it for a couple of hours, right? I could stand in the backyard with my friend Victor and toss a ball back and forth for a couple of hours, and that was entertaining, but maybe not anymore. So I am a product of my generation. Every generation is different. Everyone has a different reality, if you will. And I think sometimes what we do as functional medicine practitioners when we are health coaches, when we are educators. After all, the word doctor comes from, you know, to teach, is that we try to open our patients' eyes to a different reality, a different way of seeing things, to educate them about inflammation and how certain behaviors or certain foods or certain activities can be associated with increased inflammation in their bodies and take them down the road to conditions that affect their brain.
And of course, the brain is very much a target of inflammation, and it's kind of interesting, is this has actually been known by conventional medicine. So I don't know if you recall, but a few years back, maybe 10, 15 years ago, they undertook a trial to see if high-dose anti-inflammatory medication could slow the progression of neurologic diseases. And of course, what they discovered with the conventional NSAIDs, that they actually created an epidemic of cardiovascular disease among people who took those medications, because that's an unfortunate side effect of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Yeah, maybe that's not the best way to protect the brain. What are some ways to reduce inflammation aside from using these anti-inflammatory drugs?
Well, from a perspective of supplementation, we can think of very simple things like turmeric has an anti-inflammatory effect throughout the body. It's not, of course, going to be just the brain. Think of balancing our omega 3 to and 6 fatty acids. So I look for a ratio, a 6 to 3 ratio of in the range of 2 to 5 with my patients.
Most you people measure? You do blood tests to measure.
Yeah, and that's very important. I know a lot of folks ask me about supplements, and I think we're going to talk a little bit about supplements. But in my clinic, everything that my patients get, they get because we measured it. Mm-hmm. Unless you can't measure turmeric level or an ashwagandha.
Yeah, the low turmeric level. Oh, yeah, we have to raise your turmeric level. It's not like B12.
Right. But many things my patients are receiving because we measure. And then the corollary to that is we track. So, you know, 3 months down the line, I repeat those labs and say, okay, did we achieve the goal that we set out to achieve, or do we need to make a change? Do we need to adjust something?
One thing to measure is homocysteine, because homocysteine kind of fallen into disrepute among conventional doctors. They say, well, let's not bother to check for homocysteine. That's kind of passe. But I think for a neurologist, homocysteine has got to be something worth looking at.
Very much so. So for your listeners, homocysteine really sits at the center of a pathway that's involved in all kinds of really important things when it comes to the brain, like making those chemical communicators called neurotransmitters, norepinephrine, serotonin, dopamine. From serotonin, you get melatonin. And so, you know, if this particular pathway that Dr. Hoffman is referring to isn't really sort of well greased, if you will, your brain may have trouble producing those neurotransmitters that let the nerve cells communicate with one another. You know, it plays a role in other areas. We talk about epigenetics, or how your genes are actually expressed or not expressed. It plays a role in detoxification pathways. So it's a really, really critical linchpin in understanding what's going on with the brain at a cellular level.
And it's something that you can modify. I mean, you can't change your genes if you've got an ApoE4. There's no vitamin that makes you not have an ApoE4. But the homocysteine can be lowered effectively with nutritional intervention.
Mm-hmm. Yes, especially we talk about the role of folate, although certainly that's not the exclusive nutrient that influences homocysteine levels. But folate is a critical player, B12, B6 as well.
And how often do you find, because you see a lot of patients, how often do you see some mysterious undiagnosed neurological problem that is related to a very low level of vitamin B12 that's much ignored by conventional medicine?
Well, low levels of B12 are actually extremely common. And for our office, so we use a variety of labs. Some lab companies have more of an association with functional medicine, like Genova Diagnostics or Great Plains Laboratories.
So we also use B12 levels, because they can be misleading.
Yes, but what I was pointing that we also use some of the conventional lab companies like Quest, mm-hmm. and in their actual report of your B12 level, although it provides a reference range of, I think, 200 to 1100, there's a little caveat below that. And it says individuals with a level of 200 to 400 may experience neuropsychiatric symptoms.
Yeah.
So it's just very interesting. Of course, Quest has no, they're not invested in functional medicine at all. And yet even the Quest pathologists recognize that it's important to have optimal levels of B12. And so if you set your minimum level of 400 or 500, I tend to like levels above 500, you'll see an enormous number of people below 500. Mm-hmm. And even below 300 is extremely common. And of course, outright deficiency below 200, we see fairly often as well.
Also, can that mimic the symptoms of depression or Alzheimer's disease or any other disorders?
100%. 100%. It can cause multiple problems. Of course, it can cause anemia, and it can cause spinal cord and peripheral nerve disease. But yeah. Similarly, it affects the brain in multiple ways. It can look like sclerosis. It can present with dementia and psychosis or mental illness. So it's a very, very important nutrient.
So you're involved in a couple of clinical trials, I noticed, from your website. By the way, give out the information about your website, because some of the listeners may want to take advantage of the resources there.
Yeah, so our website is www.functionalmedicine.doctor. Doctor is spelled out, D-O-C-T-O-R, functionalmedicine.doctor.
Wow, you nailed that down. That's a pretty pretty cool domain to have been able to acquire.
Yeah.
Good for you.
We have been doing some clinical research in the office. I have an academic background from my days at Emory and Vanderbilt and University of Virginia. So I sort of weaned on academic medicine and continued to pursue clinical trials throughout my entire career. Most of what our clinical trials have been about have focused on multiple sclerosis in the past few years, and we've been involved in helping pharmaceutical companies bring their products to market. So it's been fairly traditional in that regard, but some very novel types of compounds that are part of a whole new wave of pharmaceuticals called biologics that are more and more common these days. But we are starting to get into some clinical trials with nutraceuticals as well. I'm very excited about. We're going to be doing a clinical trial with a nitric oxide compound and looking at its impact on vascular health and cognition. So that's just around the bend. And I have some ideas about doing some additional work looking at a comparison of using compounds like N-acetylcysteine, which, as you know, many people use to help raise up their glutathione levels, and comparing it to a compound called Avmacol that uses a different mechanism to activate pathways inside the cells that in turn raise glutathione levels. So Avmacol works indirectly to raise glutathione levels. But the question is, which one can be more successful for our patients? Do we put them on the traditional path, or do we use basically a compound that's based on broccoli?
Right. To Avmacol, is that not a sulforaphane derivative, or I'm a little bit I'm familiar with the term, but what is that again?
Yes, Avmacol, which is A-V-M-A-C-O-L for your listeners, contains a combination of sulforaphane and myrinase, the enzyme, and these two compounds have an effect at the nuclear level of the cells to activate pathways that in turn lead to increases in glutathione levels.
And so I think there was a clinical trial recently looking at autism, individuals with autism being treated with sulforaphane with some discernible improvements. So that's an exciting line of research.
You know, probably like you, I measure glutathione levels in my patients, and I see an enormous, I saw one person today, and it's the first person in a long time that actually had an optimal glutathione level coming out of the gate, so to speak. I mean, everybody's glutathione level is low. And there are some very traditional ways of raising glutathione levels with N-acetylcysteine, with alpha-lipoic acid and vitamin C in support of that. But I'll be honest with you, it's very frustrating to me as a clinician because I'm not seeing the robust responses that I expect to see. And so what I want to do is actually compare this very novel compound that is Apmacol to the traditional approach and see if we can get some better results.
And the problem with glutathione being that it's broken down when taken internally, and there are some forms of glutathione that purport to raise blood levels to some degree, but it's a challenge to, as, you know, I agree with you, it's a challenge to get those levels up. In the book, you also, I mean, on the website, excuse me, you offer a free ebook, sounds intriguing, Master Chronic Pain. So give us a teaser on that ebook that's available. It's free. It's available to folks who check in on your website.
Yes. Well, chronic pain, of course, is a signal from the body that something is wrong, and very often that, once again, is an inflammatory signal. And you had brought up Terry Walls earlier, and the two of us just really drive home this idea that lifestyle is medicine. So inside the ebook, there are a couple supplement suggestions, but there's also this idea that, you know, if we work on sleep, if we work on that anti-inflammatory diet, if we develop a movement program as well as a stress resilience program, because mindset, the way we think about things, plays such a huge role in how we perceive pain, what we think about pain, whether something is in fact painful at all, really is influenced by how we think about it. And if we can develop a program that really lays a foundation in those areas, very often the experience of chronic pain can improve dramatically.
Do you harness the ketogenic diet ever? I mean, that is sometimes invoked for treatment of Alzheimer's disease, for treatment of seizure disorders. Is that part of your clinical armamentarium?
It is. We definitely know that at least in some people with Alzheimer's disease, there is a problem with energy metabolism, with glucose metabolism specifically, and the insulin receptor is not expressed. That insulin receptor needs to be present on the cell surface in order for the cell to internalize glucose and then ultimately to utilize glucose as an energy source. But therefore, it appears that the ketogenic diet could play a very powerful role. And indeed, that has been actually demonstrated by people like Russ Swerdlow up at KUMC, who did a very nice study of the ketogenic diet over a three-month period in patients with Alzheimer's disease. And they found that there was an average increase in a cognitive test called the ADAS-COG of 4 points. Wow. Now, to put that in context, a 4-point increase is actually equal to the benefit of that drug donepezil we were discussing earlier. At the end of 3 months in that trial, they took the patients off the ketogenic diet, and very interestingly, there was an abrupt decline in cognitive function. Mm. So there's no question that it can be effective. The question is it effective for everyone, and how, you know, many of us are capable of maintaining.
Yeah, because it's a very challenging paradigm. And yeah, patients who are already kind of mentally challenged, it's difficult for them to implement that kind of program without a lot of help.
Mm-hmm. And then there are other potential consequences of essentially signaling the body that it's in starvation mode. So we do have to watch things carefully. We've seen some hormone changes. We've seen changes in people's blood counts where they suppress their white blood cells as a consequence of ketosis. They suppress their bone marrow in general. And so I view it as a medical diet. And I know it's very popular now. Yeah. But I would
it's become kind of a cult. You know, it's more like a movement rather than a scientific proposition.
Yeah. I would encourage folks to explore it, but to work with someone who's experienced and make sure they're being monitored.
Indeed.
You know.
You also work with patients who suffer from migraines. So is that something that's amenable to diet, certain supplements? Can they make a difference?
And of course, the answer is yes. We often think of food sensitivities. Thank you so much. Food sensitivities as being a factor for some people with migraine. Of course, for years, even conventional doctors have talked about avoiding certain foods, the aged cheese and the red wines and things like that. But we even talk about food as inflammation, not that those things couldn't drive inflammation, of course, but certain inflammatory responses. We know that certain nutrients like magnesium, coenzyme Q, riboflavin can all play a role in either triggering or mitigating migraine, meaning that if therapeutic doses of magnesium, riboflavin, coenzyme Q, can reduce the expression of migraine in some individuals. So that can be used as a more holistic or natural preventative regimen compared to, say, using a drug like topiramate.
Right. And there's a new drug for migraines. Do you have any experience with it? It's supposed to be a once a month injectable drug that somewhat reduces the frequency of migraines. Is that worthwhile, or any downsides to that?
Yes, really, there's a whole class of these drugs, which might be called CGRP drugs or calcitonin gene-related peptide.
That's a mouthful.
This is an inflammatory molecule. It's easier to say CGRP, and it's involved in blood vessel dilation, among other things, during an inflammatory cascade. So what these drugs do is they either block CGRP directly, or they actually just block the receptor that CGRP sits on to prevent its biological activity. We now have three drugs currently FDA approved. There will be more. The good news is that they do appear to be quite safe and overall quite well tolerated and effective. The effectiveness is available. Of course, you can look up the clinical trial outcomes, but I tend to think that, you know, look, we're all human beings. No one likes taking medicine, but if you have a drug that's a simple subcutaneous injection, which is how they're administered, by sort of a clicker pen, like an EpiPen, there might be a slight pinch, but overall, they're pretty painless. You don't really have to stick the needle into your skin. You just press a trigger, and you do this once a month. There's virtually, you know, essentially 100% compliance on the medication. Most people are not going to miss their dose if it's once a month. They don't have to take it every day. So as a consequence, we get this very robust response with treatment. So yeah, we've had a lot of tremendously good results with these drugs. They go under trade names like Amavig, Ajovy, and Emgality. The Ajovy may be the most difficult to take because it's not in an auto injector. However, if people are willing to inject three doses at once, it will last for 3 months, which is kind of nice.
Okay. Well, you know, look, it sounds like you take a balanced and an eclectic approach to getting your patients well, which is really what called upon. I would call that true functional medicine. We as physicians, all of us should be practicing functional medicine, whether it's whether we're integrative or whether we're just good doctors. Because being a doctor involves evaluating the best of high-tech medicine and the best of natural therapies, putting those together in a way that gets our patients past square one. And it's a challenge in neurology, but you're certainly looking at a lot of options that are yielding very, very positive results. So kudos to you. And let's mention again, the book is The Healthy Brain Toolbox, wherein you'll find a lot more details on how to keep your brain working.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Dr. Ken Scharlin, thank you for joining. It's S-H-A-R-L-I-N. If you want to Google it, check out his website. Lots of information there. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Tending to your cardiovascular health requires much more than simply lowering your cholesterol. Maintaining heart health requires a combination of diet and lifestyle choices, along with a smart regimen of supplementation. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Heart Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to reduce your heart risk. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for details. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.